Welcome back to the podcast, episode number 89. Oh my God, that's so many. Today is a special episode, Mr. Marty Burtz. He is a complete legend, author, restaurateur, chef, knows all things Thai cooking and blows you out of the water when you go to his restaurant, Short Grain, in Brisbane. Today's episode is brought to you by Chef Notepad. Know your costs in the kitchen so that you can run a successful business like Marty. So check that out, Chef Notepad. And also brought to you by Tim Adams Coffee, my favorite coffee. I see them down at Northerly Street's Farmers Markets every Sunday. John whips me up a coffee. The beans are delicious. You too can have them in your cafe if you have a cafe. Check them out, Tim Adams Coffee. Okay, let's get into this with Marty. Martin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Welcome back to Brisbane. You've been here a little while now. Yeah, I know you came from here originally, but you're back.
I am.
How have you settled in?
I have created my own reality, really, because I love where I live and I love where I work. So there's sort of two of the biggest things. So you could be anywhere in the world. That's what I say to people when they ask me that question.
Yeah, you could actually be anywhere in the old world. Right where we are, we're at Short Grain. And it's one of the most beautiful, iconic buildings in Brisbane, in my opinion. And it's got that vibe of busyness because we're right near that road, which you cannot hear. And there's a lineup out the front all the time. You always wanted a restaurant with a lineup. Now you've got one.
I know. Well, we have had lineups. It's great being in a little street that we finished it off because this was the last sort of tenancy of this building to be completed. And then we've got Brookies next door, we've got Etna, Rose Marino, and then Establishment 203. So it's a nice little family of restaurants and a patisserie or cake shop or cookie shop, whatever you want to call it. Brookies is amazing. And everyone's really friendly towards each other as well. So instead of being sort of it's sort of created its own precinct. And I love Marshall Street because it's got the beautiful park across the road, which has just been beautified by the council, which I'm really grateful for. And it's a really good area. So, and there's still a bit of parking on the street, which is amazing.
Yeah, I was very surprised I got a park with Brookies next door. But it's just off the Story Bridge in Brizzy. If anyone doesn't know where we're talking about, it's quite a beautiful little location and lots of things to do and see around here. And actually plenty of parking. There's loads of car parks around here. So.
Oh, totally. We're 8 minutes from Howard Smith Wharves and 800 metres. So that's probably about maybe 10-minute walk to James Street. So we're sort of right in between.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Mate, you've come back to town, but I want to dive right back quickly to, was there a childhood inspiration? How did you get into Asian food? You know, you're a boy from Brizzy at the end of the day.
Well, I mean, I finished my apprenticeship at Faces Restaurant in Given Terrace and Paddington in Brizzy. And there was a bit of Asian influence there, but I had no clue about Asian food at all. And so that sort of was the beginnings of the tasting of different things that I sort of hadn't ever experienced. And the first Thai restaurant I went to was in Brisbane and it was in Brunswick Street called Barn Thai. So I remember going there with a friend of mine quite often and we'd get a bottle of Rothbury Estate Chardonnay and go there and it was a BYO and I used to love a yellow curry of prawns with cucumber relish. So that was sort of the first thing that I really thought, oh, this is really good. But then moving a few years forward, finishing my apprenticeship, I lived overseas for a few years. I was a waiter in London and did some other work in Germany and then came back, moved back to Brizzy, didn't like it, and moved to Sydney.
Hard to do after being in London, I'd imagine. Like Brizzy at the time would have been
it was 1991 when I came back. So, yeah, it was still a bit backward, I have to say.
Yeah.
And obviously, even a few years ago, it was probably lack of coming here more so than thinking I didn't ever want to live back here. But I sort of hadn't been back for such a long time and spent time here. And then I had, like, during the COVID, I came up to see my parents or my mum, and then I came again for a Christmas. And I looked around and I thought, yeah, it's really changed and I really, really liked being here.
Yeah, I think just, yeah, well, yeah, I agree. Since COVID, the food scene has really got really good, and there's lots of great suppliers and, you know, great people who are trying to do something more so than just, you know, make money. It's more about, hey, provide a great place to go and eat and enjoy, and that culture's becoming more and more here, where people come out for a glass of Chardonnay and a curry, as opposed to in the old days they might go to a special occasion dinner, you know, 20 years ago. So welcome back, I'd like to say. Yeah. And you've been welcome back. It's a pretty friendly little community up here, as is the food community everywhere. But jumping back to inspiration, did you ever go to Thailand and just absorb the culture and the food, or was mainly your inspiration from other chefs and restaurants that you'd worked in?
Inspiration, I suppose I worked for Dali Street at Dali Street Thai with David Thompson, and then I moved, and then my first head chef's job when I was 25, I was head chef of Sailor's Thai, which was his second restaurant in Sydney. And so I was together with him probably for about 6 years. And so I learned a lot through that time. And then after that, I worked with a girlfriend of mine, Alex Herbert, at Bird Cow Fish for about a year. And so went back to Western food. And then we decided that we shouldn't work together because we're such good friends. And it was a bit challenging because we're both quite strong-headed. And then we, so that sort of saved our wonderful friendship, which we still have today. And then I went back to Dali Street and did, they had this little cafe next to Dali Street called Box, which was like a little designer cafe that sort of didn't work. And then we took it over, or Dali Street took it over, and I did Dali Street Thai Tuck Shop in there and just did food that I cooked in the morning when the kitchen was empty, and I'd take it over there, or I'd use leftover curry or whatever they had from the night before, and I'd serve it in a really small cafe. And that was actually, there was it was me and another guy, my friend Chen, who helped. Actually, he was doing design school at that time, but he helped design Short Grain, and he and I did that for quite a few years together. And and then I left that there and was a private chef in New York for a couple. But inspiration-wise, I suppose, I got a lot of inspiration from David. He let me do a lot of things that I'd learnt through him at Sailors, so I sort of inspired myself. And then there was also a lot of great suppliers bringing in, or he was getting people to grow things for us that weren't really grown a lot in and on the mainstream market, like apple eggplants, pea eggplants, holy basil, hairy eggplants. What else did we get? Like tobacco leaves that were shredded finely and put through a curry called Bayor. And so many different things that even now we can't really, not a lot of people grow them anymore. So I suppose all of that inspiration was in my brain. And then after coming back from New York, I then started doing horticulture, which didn't sort of rock my boat. It did rock my boat, but I hadn't schooled for such a long time, so it was pretty hard to learn how to use a computer when I think I was about 29. And then the Sam and Rob, who were opening a restaurant in Surry Hills, approached me about helping them design the kitchen of this particular restaurant that they hadn't named yet. And anyway, we decided we all liked each other, and then we they offered me the head chef position, and that turned into Long Grey.
Wow, that's a great story. Glad you boxed it up nicely. That's lovely, because not a lot of people know, well, probably a lot of people do, but that story before Long Grey, and that was, you know, so that's really... That tells me a lot about you and how you got to there. So Long Grain, for me, I only ever went to the Melbourne one.
Yeah.
So that was after the Sydney one. Mm-hmm. So the Sydney one went for a long time, didn't it?
The Sydney one closed in 2018.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, we opened in 1999.
Yeah. Oh, so you had both going? They were both going? Wow. Yeah. So you were jumping backwards and forwards.
Yeah, so 7 years. We opened Long Grain in Melbourne in 2005, and I left in 2013. And so I did do both cities every week for 7 years.
What an absolute inspiration that place was. It felt like, no, I might be a little naive, but it felt like the first super cool Asian place that you could go that just felt like you were at cutting edge time. You were made to feel cool as soon as you walked there. The staff were friendly, the food was tasty, the wine was good, the beer was great. Mm. But it really summed up modern, I think, for me, in Australia. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I basically I was doing what I did in Sydney in a, well, we called it a grown-up restaurant because it was a lot more expensive than to set that up than Long Grand Sydney. And it was beautiful. Like, we had designers and we had, you know, architect, designer, all the finishes were very beautiful. And not saying that Long Grand Sydney wasn't. And I have to say, Long Grand Sydney, when I look at pictures today of one of the first photo shoots that we did with the place empty, just for an sort of interior magazine, it could still be relevant today. Like, it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
If somebody opened that restaurant today and opened it as a new restaurant that and Long Grand hadn't existed, it could still work. It would still work.
Timeless.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. So when you were at Bird Cowfish with Alex Herbert, you used to come to the Noosa Food and Wine. And that's where I met you up there at the back of Belmondo's. And was that just a party for you guys? Because it looked like you were just having
I only did Food and Wine, Noosa Food and Wine when I was at Long Grain. So I think I did that the first time. I did that because I became really good friends with Jim and Greg, and who ran the festival. And I think, I can't remember the first time I did it, but it would have been sort of 2003 or four.
Yep.
And I did it for about 8 years or 9 years. And yes, it was a party, but we also, I know that I worked hard because we had, I always did three events. So I did two days of doing the Spice Farm long lunch, and then I did a degustation and also cooking demonstration. So it was pretty busy.
Yeah, I remember.
But I was younger. I could handle getting drunk at night and then going to do it again the next day.
So no more. They are good festivals. Are the festivals today as good, you reckon?
I believe that one was probably the best. The reason why I like that one the best out of all, well, Melbourne Food and Wine was always very good as well, and still is. The Noosa Food and Wine back then, when it was an international festival, I believe that you had access, or the general public had really good access to chefs.
Yep.
Because they were walking around.
Yeah.
And people could go and talk to them, and it was in that park, or, you know, I met so many people that I'd never thought I'd meet, and I really enjoyed all of the years that I did that. And we did work hard. I brought a team up with me, and yeah, it was good organization, and collaborating with other chefs from all over the world was really fun too.
Yeah, that was a great festival. I love the Taste of Port Douglas is one of my favorite these days. I'm looking forward to this year's Noosa one. When you were jumping backwards and forwards to Sydney and Melbourne and doing these festivals, how did you look after you, or did you not look after you? Like, what was the balance there?
There wasn't.
There wasn't, yeah. And that is the Osprey game, isn't it?
No. And honestly, doing what I'm doing now, I've really got to be careful. Obviously, I'm not as young as I was back then, and I think that that's something that we've really all got to think about. Especially the hours are definitely shorter, and even the people that work here, they we can't work them as long as
The rules have changed, haven't they?
Yeah, what was worked before. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because people, I think, get seasoned, and it's not fear, it shouldn't be fear driven, but you have to. You can't sort of grab your bag and just leave when service is over, and you can't just come to work when service begins. There's lots of things to do after and there's lots of things to do before. So how it depends on organisation, I suppose, how you cram that into 8 hours or 9 hours or whatever it is. But anyway, that's going down that track. But health-wise, I did have to have some, wasn't mental help, but I did do some self-help work in the time when we opened Melbourne, because I struggled with that restaurant not being, I didn't understand how that restaurant couldn't be the same as Sydney, how people were different, the customers were different, what people liked and what they didn't like were different to what they liked and didn't like in Sydney. And so I sort of had to change the menu, but my mind was that both menus would be the same and obviously specials would be different in the both cities, but the structure of the main menu would be quite similar. But there was things that were staples and very popular in Sydney that Melbourne people didn't like, which I found bizarre. And also just staff were different.
Yeah.
It's like having a child.
Oh.
That the restaurant developed its own personality, and as this one did, when my vision for here was different, well, was different to what it is now. So anyway, that's sort of what I learned. And then I just had to learn not to be a control freak.
Letting go. Those laws about, you know, over what people working over, it's actually hard because we're in such a creative industry as well, as much as it is an organisation. Do you think that that's generally affected food today for every restaurant, not just you, but do you think it's changed the way the menus are? Or have we had to go, you know what, we're actually going to have to tighten this up and have less on the menu? Or do you think it has changed the food scene?
Yes, yeah. Definitely. I think Thai food is labour intensive, and I really believe that that's something that I struggled with here as well at the beginning, just having to tighten the menu where I couldn't have sort of too many things that involved, like the curry paste take a long time to make, chili jam takes a long time to make, and everything has to be done properly because you can taste it in the end product. So it's really important that steps aren't skipped. So that's something that, yeah, has definitely influenced me in what I'm writing on my menus at the moment, well, now. And long grain, we all worked a little bit. We did work longer hours. And we also, yeah, I had a bigger production kitchen there as well. And I also made the curry paste in Sydney, and I flew them down to Melbourne, so I had more control over them. And it also took the workload off that restaurant because we didn't have a very big back of house there to do the prep.
Yeah, I can imagine. Scarlett's got a lovely question here, but letting go, like the control, it's a phase of my business as well. Like, how do you let go of that control and, you know, particularly tasks you love? Like, you might have loved making the so-and-so. How did that transition go for you?
Well, I'm doing that now because I work on the floor here in this restaurant. I don't work in the kitchen. But I also learnt through that self-help work all those years ago that when you employ that person to do that particular job, you've got to let them do that job and let them develop their own style and skills, and not override them. And that's something that I am.
It's hard because I don't, a lot of challenges in it. Because if you taste something, it's like, wait a minute, is that good, better, or worse, or too different to what the customers?
I can still guide.
Yeah, yeah.
Worry me. Yeah. I'll go in there and guide people, and I'll taste stuff and things, but as in working a service and how you operate a service, even though I'm on the other side food running and taking the food from the other side to the guests, I can't really then start controlling the kitchen from the other side. So I've really got to shut my mouth and not interfere with what's going on the other side. I could definitely pull somebody aside and say, look, why don't you try this? Why don't you do this? But yeah, I need to just let them do it.
Self-help, you know, it's like a good word for some, a dirty word for others. It's a really important part of growth, I think. And it has a stigma attached to it to a degree, but what are your thoughts? I know you said you did some. Do you ongoingly do that? How do you look after yourself now? Now that you're in this position of you've got a great restaurant, you've got a great team, are you able to balance it out a little bit more?
I'm still working on that. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, right.
I have to say. But it's easier now than it was before. And I'm older, so I've done, and I have downscaled. This is all I'm doing. I'm not doing anything else. I only work in this restaurant. I don't really want to do festivals anymore. I don't really want to sort of put myself out there doing things that I did at Long Grain, even like private dinners and things like that. And people's, I'm just not ready for that right now, because I'm still building a team.
Yeah.
Before you can sort of pluck people out and say, okay, blah, blah, these two people are coming with me. We're going to do this tonight. So
the power of saying no.
The power of saying no is really important. And like all the way back at the beginning of Long Grain, somebody said to me, which was actually Lindy Melange, that she said, you need like a PR person. Like you need somebody to filter what is coming to you.
Yeah.
Because so much stuff was constantly, or you were constantly being asked to do things, and I would then say yes, and then all of a sudden you'd be overloaded with all these things, and whether it was cooking classes or food festivals or interviews or cooking at people's houses or
podcasts,
whatever it is, it would be, I'd just say yes. But then that person would then filter and say, okay, what do you want to do, and are you getting paid, or is it for free? Is it worth doing it for the restaurants? So that's sort of something that we I might just wait.
Yeah, we'll just cut here for a second.
What's that?
Come over here, we'll pause. Scott, we've got it.
I can't hear what you're saying.
It's not for you guys.
Yeah, so just go in the main entrance of the building. It's just literally, see the glass here?
Yeah.
That's the entrance in there.
Crash them down. Have a lovely day. So just put a pause on that. You'll know when, Scarlett.
Yeah, sorry. I just don't
want to it looked like we thought it was for here, but anyway. Where were we? You know what to say now is. Okay, tell me when you're ready to go again, Scarlett. You know what, one of the biggest challenges and fears that a lot of people have, and you've done it now, is going out on your own. Go and do a business with business partners where you've got that support from that, from that, hey, this is our money, as opposed to your own. That must have took a lot of courage, mate. How did you conjure that up to do it by yourself?
I didn't want business partners.
Oh, you do it?
I did not.
Not at Long Grain.
Long Grain I did.
Yeah, but now you don't have business partners,
no,
do you?
Yeah, I do not.
So that step for me is a big step, because a lot of people do it with business partners and great, you know, you've got complementary skills or whatever, but going out by yourself I think takes courage.
Yeah, no, it does. And I did it at the farm too. Like I acquired business partners when I was at the Cook Shed for the last 10 years within that time. And that was basically to make the business bigger and also to build a kitchen. And they saw the potential in that. And then after years of doing it one particular way, then having that enough capital to build a kitchen and put more infrastructure on the farm, then that was fantastic. Unfortunately, it did open when COVID just began to, you know, be able to do bigger weddings and have a fully commercial kitchen and bathrooms and things that that were so beautifully built. And and then getting through that part of those, you know, those 2 years, and then
you flipped to boxes and stuff. How cool was that? You did Shit Down with a Glass of Champagne, I heard on another podcast, and you flipped to sort of doing.
Oh, we had to. Well, I was seeing what was happening in Europe, and then I just said to the girls and this other fellow that were all working with me full time, I said, I don't know what to do, but I'm thinking maybe we should give Takeaway a go, and that's what we did, and it was really successful. There were a lot of people around the area that obviously didn't have. It was in the middle of sort of nowhere, but there was lots of people around me that needed food, and also my people that I used to get things from to sell into Sydney, other farmers. I still bought from them and then filled the produce boxes up with fruit, vegetables, things that I'd cooked. Bread that I sourced from a few kilometres away from a guy, an Italian baker, and eggs we had from the egg farm down the road, and we also had goat's curd and goat's cheese from Willowbrae, which was just down the road. And yeah, so there was enough stuff to value add to a box, which then allowed me to survive.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had
it's hard to do the maths.
We
on
had
that,
government help.
Yeah, of course. I think none of us were surprised,
which was
about
really
that.
Important. Yeah. And that was great. But I needed a certain amount of money to survive a week, as in to keep the farm going.
Yeah.
Plus keep my staff, because I couldn't do what I did on my own.
Yeah, it was daunting. We flipped the boxes as well, as most people know, but it's just working those boxes out every week and keeping people, you know.
Oh, man. Oh, just the delivery. Madeline, who worked for me, she had the list. She, you know, had the people. She had the numbers. She did it. I don't know how I couldn't have done it without her and her mum. And, they were a team. And then I had another guy, Zachy, helping me in the kitchen. So I would go to the market on Wednesdays, come back, unload, start prepping sort of base stocks and stuff on Thursdays on my own, and then he would come and help me Friday and Saturday to pack boxes and finish off. He was actually good at pastry, so he would make cakes and stuff, so we'd put cakes and desserts in the boxes too.
That was a tough time. You had floods and...
Oh, that was after the COVID.
Yeah. That was like a biblical challenge by the sounds of it. You were on the land, you were growing stuff.
It was first the fire, then the floods, then...
You have heard the Australian anthem as droughts and flooding rains.
I know, I was singing that to somebody last night when they were asking me the question. So
there's a real attraction to you, Marty. Like,
that's a poem.
Yes, oh, is it? Not a, is it? Yeah, it's not right. A song. Sorry, thank you for keeping me cultured. You've always had a lot of people attracted to you. You've surrounded yourself with smart people your whole life. You've worked for great people. Tell me about some of the people that have made a big impact on you. You've mentioned a couple of David Thompson. Tell me some more. And also, then I want to hear about your prodigy people, like Ben, who worked for you, who ended up, he's got his restaurant down in Adelaide now, who's...
Oh, Ben Bursey, Ben Bursey and Louis Tikaram down at Stanley.
Yeah.
There's quite a few floating around the world. I call them my kids. I've had a lot of people come through the kitchens, and I have to say that, you know, really proud of people that have taken it to another level or taken it overseas, or you see them prosper into something else. And I've had really good support from head chefs and sous chefs over all those periods of my life, and especially in the times where it was tough. Having to go through times where, you know, either you had staff issues or just my own issues, not that I had many, but, you know, you always have an ups and downs, and they were always very supportive, but I have always worked just as hard as everyone else. So I suppose that was something that I said that to my mum a while ago when I first opened this restaurant. I said that, you know, we had a few people come and go at the beginning here, and I said, well, you know, I just don't understand. I'm trying I'm trying to lead by example. And she said, that's a crock of shit.
Mum's stay at
true. I'll put on your mum. Yeah, that's always the way I've worked. I've always done the work as well.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful. What do you think your purpose is? You know, like you're back to here and you're serving, you're pleasing people in a beautiful way now with this delicious food. Do you think that the farm was like a part of life that sort of made you almost come back around to this, you know, this hospitality game? Because
I did the farm, but I had a second shed, so I turned that into an event space.
Yeah, right.
So I sort of was going, I went back there anyway, because that wasn't my intention at the beginning. And I sort of wanted it to be more of a farm plus a place for chefs to come and grow and do and use it more as a place of learning rather than turning it back into a restaurant. But it's comfort zone stuff. So
yeah,
I came back and this is what's happened here, where I sort of wanted it to be more like an eatery, and then this other space was going to be like a Asian food store, and but all of a sudden it just turned into a big restaurant. And also when it was finished, it looked more like a restaurant than an eatery.
Yes, I read and saw the evolution of your vision and then turned into what it is today, which is still, in fact, it's. I think you said it before, it creates its own vibe and personality in itself, yeah. You know.
No, people, when they came in, when it was finished, they said, Marty, it's not an eatery, it's a restaurant. Get it into your head.
More truth.
Get it into your head.
Yeah.
And I went, okay.
Oh, that's all right.
Let's take bookings.
And now more of your grandchildren. You know, Daniel's here as well. So he worked with Ben, is that right?
Oh, Dan. Yeah, Dan's here. He's the head chef here. And he's doing a great job. And, all new team. Like, I've not worked with anyone here before.
Right. But weirdly you have, because Daniel worked for...
People that have trained with people that I trained, and also some of the floor staff have come from same as well,
yeah.
or from long time. So again, but the floor is a little bit different to the kitchen, but obviously serving food that is similar to what we're doing here.
What's the biggest change from Sydney, Melbourne, and just the evolution of the food that you're doing from those days to now? Is there something that's just massively stand out that's different?
It's more expensive.
Oh, my God. Literally talking to a guy in London who supplies London and Paris with fruit and vegetables, and he said, Graham, when you come over, you're going to have to get a loan because the restaurants are so expensive because of the increasing cost. And that's, again, for the reasons that you were talking about before.
Mm.
The labour game is cut short.
Yeah.
There's all these penalty rates which you have to actually understand and do properly.
But you've got to, like, what I was saying to, and this is something interesting for people that are listening, is, well, I'm sort of spruiking it for short grain's sake, is that when you come in and you pay $69 for a curry, but you're sharing it, and you can come in for a curry of green curry of Rocky Point Groper, which is about 180 grams of fish, and it's $69 or whatever it is, but you halve that, it's only $35.
Mm.
You can't get a main course for $35 anymore in an establishment. I mean, they are $69, but that's for you.
Mm.
Not to share.
Yes.
So that's something that was the case at Long Grain as well. Like I encouraged people to come in and just have a curry, have a rice, have a glass of wine, and you could be in and out quickly. And number two, it wouldn't be that expensive. And that's something, and we do have a lot of regular customers now. All of, you know, even though we've only been open for 7 months, we do have a regular clientele.
Wow, that's fantastic. Look at the fan here. We've got 1,000 people outside watching the podcast.
I know.
Here.
I know. It's amazing.
Every day. Mate, what do you think? What's the future? What's coming up?
Not sure. My goal at the moment is to do a year and just to see how what how it all sort of works in Brisbane over a year, through winter, through school holidays and through sporting events, because it honestly Brisbane does either leave, like they do leave.
Easter, yes.
And then sporting events, it's either going to be really busy or some people really avoid the areas because they just don't want to get stuck in or jammed in traffic, which has happened once here before, because it also rained and then there was an accident on the Story Bridge and people just couldn't come.
Mm.
They literally couldn't get here.
Yeah.
And they had to cancel, and that was weird. And then you don't have walking traffic because people are avoiding the area or they're going to a sporting event. So anyway, but it's all lessons and it's just learning. And yeah, I just want to do a year before I decide. I mean, I'm very happy just doing what I'm doing.
Beautiful. That's really good. I just want to touch on a couple of general questions. Who's doing stuff in Australia that you're really loving, like food-wise, can be old or young?
I really like how Neil Perry's gone down and reinvented Double Bay, I have to say. And again, it's hospitality driven. It's family, his family driven. And I think he's doing a great job down there and opening Baker Blue and also then doing the new Songbird, I think it's called, Chinese restaurant or Asian inspired restaurant in the same area. So I think that inspires me. Lots of Melbourne. I always love Melbourne for, I love Andrew McConnell's coming to Brizzy, so that's really great. And one of his guys that are going to be working for him was here for dinner last night, Alex, so that was really good. And I'm really looking forward to Supernormal opening here. I think it's definitely a what people should be eating in Queensland. And yeah, it is exciting. It's very exciting, and there'll be more people coming up, I think, over the next while.
There is a great migration, isn't there? It's like
I know there's lots of people coming up looking.
Yeah.
So I mean, and that's why it was so great having the opportunity to get this space, because I don't think I would have found a space like this in Sydney.
Oh, I think you got here.
And I was very happy to to do this here.
I think you got one of the most ecstatically beautiful places, and you've nailed it from so many points of view. We'll go through a couple of quick questions. Where do you like to go for a eat? You can't say your own restaurant here. Where do you sneak out and get some tasty
where
food?
Something
cheap, actually.
Oh, something cheap. I'll go to Inala and have a pho at the...
Beautiful.
I love going to Inala.
Yeah.
Because
it's like you're going overseas, isn't it?
It is. I go there every other week. We also get a lot of our fruit and veg from out there. So
yeah.
That's something that I really like. And yeah, I like going out there to have something to eat and just having a look around and seeing what's around out there.
What is your favourite fruit? That's another question.
My favourite fruit is... I don't really have a favourite fruit. My favourite fruit probably is mangoes. But I like mangosteens. I love preparing jackfruit.
Oh, beautiful.
When it's around. And we did have quite a few really beautiful jackfruits this last season. And then coming into winter, I always sort of spice syrup pears and I've just ordered some, hopefully get some quinces in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we either use them in savoury or in sweet dishes.
Very much in season, the quince.
Right. Other favourite restaurants, I do like Agnes to take my friends that are coming up from New South Wales or Victoria. Another one, I often go to Stanley as well, because I like sitting outside. And it's just Brizzy.
Yeah, it is.
On the river.
Central,
yeah.
Under the bridge. Beautiful. Man, it's been a pleasure having you on.
Yeah,
I think we're going to wrap it up. You know, you've got a great story. A lot of people know you are already. You're not going to give us any idea of what you're going to do, so we won't talk about the future. But congratulations on what you've achieved.
Thank you.
And, I'm going to be a regular too and have been here twice already and enjoyed it thoroughly. So keep up the good work, mate.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being a part of our little story and inspirational part of Brisbane.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the podcast.
You're welcome.